Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. There's so many toxic chemicals around, but not everything is toxic. And there's so many people who are doing things, many wonderful things, to make the world less toxic. And those are the people that I talk to on this show and that you get to hear and that we get to discuss how we can make this world a better place and less toxic. Yesterday, I started reading from a book that I got recently called It Always Seems Impossible Until It's Done. And it's just a book full of quotations, inspiring quotations about getting through the difficult times to reach your goals and to do the thing that you want. And I know that sometimes it can seem difficult to make the switch to live toxic free. So I want to be giving you some of these quotes as inspiration. So today's quote is from Walt Disney. We all know Walt Disney. And he says, "You may not realize it when it happens, but a kick in the teeth may be the best thing in the world for you." Now, certainly getting really sick from toxic chemicals like I did was a kick in the teeth. But what it did for me is that it made me wake up and say, wait a minute, there's toxic chemicals all around me and they are making me sick and they're probably making other people sick. And there are ways that I can live. I had to find those ways way back in 1982 when nobody was writing about this. But I found ways of things that were less toxic, and I started doing them, and my health started improving. And what that did was it woke me up. It made me say, wait a minute, there's a danger here. There's something I can do about it, and I started doing something about it. And so today, my health just gets better and better. The older I get, that's not usually the way it is, but the older I get, my health gets better and better because I'm being exposed to fewer and fewer toxic things. And I'm getting more nutrition to support my body's health, and my health just gets better and better. Everybody can have this same experience. If you have any kind of health problem, toxic chemicals are probably contributing to it. And if you start removing toxic chemicals from your home, from where you work, from your body, you will likely get better. That's been my experience. Anyway, so I'm not worried about having a difficult situation because sometimes it wakes you up to see what needs to be done so that you can have a better life. My guest today is Joy Onash. She oversees the community and small business programs at the Toxic Use Reduction Institute at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. We had one of her colleagues on before, Liz Harriman, and we talked about some things that they're doing there at the Toxic Use Reduction Institute. But today we're going to talk specifically about what she's doing in the area of cleaning and especially dry cleaning, what she's doing with small businesses, what the Toxic Use Reduction Institute does to help small businesses swap out toxic chemicals and use things that are more toxic free. Hi, Joy.
Hi, Deborah.
Thank you so much for being here with me.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so why don't we start out by, Liz went into some of this before, but today's a new day with a new audience. So tell us what the Toxic Use Reduction Institute does.
Sure. We are an organization at UMass Lowell, as you mentioned, that works with industries, small businesses, municipalities, community organizations to reduce the use of toxic chemicals across the state. And our information is available online to anybody anywhere who's interested in obtaining it. We work focused on certain chemicals at certain times and also additional inquiries that come in from the public. Are there certain special areas that require attention at different chemicals at different times? But we provide training. We provide grants. We provide peer mentoring type working groups. We have a laboratory service. We have folks focused on policy research and analysis. We have a library that's available online and for visiting if people wanted to come to UMass Lowell. And so our main aim is to provide unbiased information about issues around toxics and alternatives that are available and work with the organizations, whether it's a large industry or a small community organization or anyone in between in trying to find a feasible alternative for them to switch from a toxic chemical. And by feasible, I mean something that's going to work for them and something that makes economic sense for them.
Yeah, so it works around a win-win-win-win.
Right.
I was really interested to see in your bio that you are a registered toxics use reduction planner. What is that?
So there's many of us across the state of Massachusetts.
I think that's so wonderful. I think that that's what I am, too. I'm a toxic use reduction planner. But
nice,
I'm not
nice.
Certified, but that's what I do.
Right. That would certainly fit in the category. So Turi actually oversees a very formal program to certify planners. That it requires that industries do this thing called a toxic use reduction plan every other year. They pay fees and report their chemical use each year, and then every other year they have to go through this planning process. And part of the planning process requires that they have a certified toxic use reduction planner stamp off on their plan, essentially. They can do the plan themselves and have a toxic use reduction planner review it, or they can hire or train an in-house person to become that toxic use reduction planner. And it means that they've been trained by us who are intimate with what the process should be on finding alternatives and evaluating them, and then they can sign off on these different plans. And the really unique thing about the program is that the companies are required to do this every other year, but they're not actually required to implement anything. It's left up to them to learn from the process and find out that there's alternatives available, and, hey, maybe it's even going to save me money if I go ahead and implement them, which is often the case.
I want to make sure that everybody listening understands that this is required by law in the state of Massachusetts, yes?
Right. So
yes.
Back in 1989, the Toxic Use Reduction Act was implemented. And since then, businesses who use chemicals over certain thresholds have to report on their use and go through this planning process. Right.
It would be wonderful if every state in the union had that law, so that all manufacturers will be having to take a look at what is their toxic use. And and then everybody needs to start scaling back on the toxics. California is coming up with something similar to that, I think. And but that's another show. We'll talk about California.
Several states have tried to emulate our program, or at least parts of it. I know I've taught folks in both New Jersey and New York about the community programs that I work on, and I know that Canada is starting to implement the Toxic Use Reduction Planners program that I just described. So it's definitely emulated both within the United States and obviously internationally. And something, again, unique is that it's talking about the use of toxics, whereas other federal programs deal with the release of toxics, which is too late.
Ah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I'd never even thought of that. Yes.
Yeah, the toxics release inventory asks companies to report on their releases that they've already had to the environment. So our program tries to get to the reduction of toxics before they're even used, before they even enter the workplace or the manufacturing process, so that they're not able to be released in any fashion.
Right. That's even better. Joy, tell us, how did you get interested in the subject of toxics? How did you get trained to be this person who can do this?
Well, let's see. I am an engineer. I'm a mechanical engineer as my undergraduate degree, and I went on to get a master's in engineering and policy, which had some focus on environmental issues. And then I worked in private consulting for about 15 years, and somehow, sort of by chance, I ended up working on a lot of regulatory and compliance issues. So I did a lot of site visits to military facilities, hospitals, universities, looking at how they were managing their hazardous waste, their wastewater, their oil storage, and helping them write up plans that are required by law. And I ended up starting to get a little frustrated with the private consulting world and looking for something else, and came across the Toxic Use Reduction Institute. And that sort of is what helped, just the job opening actually is sort of what helped make me realize that I had been working with organizations to manage the waste and the toxics that they were using, but this was an opportunity to work with them to reduce the use of it in the first place, and gave it just a very different perspective. It's a very different way of working with people instead of, you know, pushing them into compliance and helping them with their compliance needs. I'm able to help them be more proactive and getting rid of the use of the toxic chemicals in the first place.
Yes, and when you do that, get rid of the toxic chemicals in the first place, then there's no need for compliance. because there's nothing there that needs to be complied with. we need to take a break. And you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Joy Onash from the Toxic Use Reduction Institute at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. My guest today is Joy Onash from the Toxic Use Reduction Institute at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. Before the break, we were talking about you being a toxic use reduction planner. And could you just say a few words about how you might apply what you do with businesses to consumers, how we can use that same kind of structure to think about our reducing our toxic use?
Sure. So I guess it's for either small businesses or organizations or institutions or the personal consumer, it's about understanding what you're using and what you're exposed to each day and thinking about making changes and investigating what other alternatives are out there that are feasible for you that, that perform in the same way that you are used to having something perform for you or being economically feasible for you to use. You know, we take the same approach, whether it's a large corporation or a small entity that's interested in finding alternatives and reducing the use of toxics. But I guess the first step really is to sort of do an inventory about what you use or what you may be exposed to, what services you use and toxic chemicals you may be exposed to there, and evaluating what alternatives may exist.
I think that that is so intelligent because I think that a lot of times for people, it seems overwhelming. Like I wrote a book in 1984, my first published book in 1984 was just a directory of the non-toxic products that I could find at the time. And I'd just like to say that the number of non-toxic options that are available now is so huge, it wouldn't fit in a book. That's why I have a website. And that's how much we've improved in the last 30 years. Right. But I remember at the time, people would say, oh, I feel overwhelmed. Where do I start? So I wrote another book called The Non-Toxic Home, which didn't have any resources in it at all. It just said, all right, let's take a look at where the toxic chemicals are and what that you're being exposed to and what type of things are the alternatives. And so I suppose that book was the book that was comparable to your inventory. But I think that right now today, like that book isn't available. I don't have an equivalent book like that. But I'm looking at how I can provide that information in an organized way on my website so that somebody could look up shampoo and find out what toxic chemicals they might be being exposed to. But I think that it is a good idea. In that book, what I tried to do was organize the products from most toxic first to least toxic. And so some things at the beginning of the book were things like cleaning products and pesticides that are really toxic. And I was encouraging people to take the most toxic things that they could identify and replace those first. And I think that that's probably the strategy across the board.
Absolutely. And also factoring in there maybe what's most approachable, especially for a consumer, that it might be overwhelming for them to think about how to make one change, but something else seems real simple to them, and they can just go ahead and implement it. And if making those small, sort of the low-hanging fruit changes gives them some confidence and some knowledge and where the resources are to make additional changes, that can assist as well.
Yeah, I always say start with whatever appeals to you, even if it's buying organic pickles. Every time we go to the store, we're making a choice. And I'm not expecting people to suddenly buy everything toxic-free, particularly because there's a certain amount of education that goes with it. But if you can identify something, like if you really like to eat, that's probably a good place to start, is to just start buying organic food. And you know, then you've done something. Or it's actually pretty easy to change to cleaning products because you can just start using baking soda and vinegar, and that'll clean almost everything. And, you know, even if you just go down to the natural food store and just pick any cleaning product off the shelf, it's better than buying it at the supermarket.
Right.
And anybody can do that.
Right.
Okay, so the show is billed as being about dry cleaning, and I know that you're working with dry cleaners, so let's talk about that.
Sure. Yeah, so talking about making choices And if someone is in a profession or just in their lives, they don't have time to do all their cleaning or they have special cleaning needs, they need to take stuff to the dry cleaner, a choice they can make is to search out a dry cleaner who's using alternative methods, not using the standard perchloroethylene solvent to clean their clothes.
So tell us, what are the health effects of using perchloroethylene, and are there other toxic chemicals? Why should people not be using this?
So there's a couple different levels of issues, but people who are exposed can have acute exposure issues or chronic exposure issues. It is classified under the U.S. National Toxicology Program as a reasonably anticipated to be a human carcinogen. The International Agency on Research on Cancer lists it as probably carcinogenic to humans. And the other shorter-term issues can be skin irritation, nausea, headaches, exacerbation of asthma, that type of an issue. So those who are going to be most exposed are the people who are going to work with it most directly, and that's likely the people in the dry cleaning shop who are putting it into their machine, taking it out, cleaning the filters on the machine, opening the doors, you know, 5 or 6 times a day, depending on how many loads they do. And then the consumer will have less exposure, certainly, but it has been studied that perchloroethylene does come home on clothes that have been put through the solvent in the dry cleaning process. The clothes come out of the machine, they get pressed, and they get bagged in plastic bags, and it comes home. Once you take the bag off in your closet or in your house, there is perch coming off of those clothes. And they have put in place a law on a federal level coming into play in 2020 where dry cleaning shops that use perch are not going to be allowed in residential facilities anymore. And that's because it has been studied that the perch is actually getting out from the shop and getting up into the residences that are above them. So
you mean like where there's a dry cleaning shop on the ground floor of an apartment building or something like that?
Right, yeah. Which is mostly in the big cities, even less so, not even in Boston. Are there many like that? But that did push, you know, the federal EPA to look at it and to put into place this requirement. So there's a couple different ways of exposure for the public as well.
Good. Well, we need to take another break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about dry cleaning with Troy O'Nash from the Toxic Use Reduction Institute at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Troy O'Nash from the Toxic Use Reduction Institute at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. You know, during the breaks, what I do is I check my emails just because people sometimes email me with questions. The other day, somebody emailed. In fact, if you have a question and you want to email me during this show, you can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and use the contact form there, and it will come straight to me, and I'll check it during the break. But I got an email from one of my readers. One of the things that I do is that I send out an inspiring quote every morning, and a reader had written back to me thanking me for this particular quote. And it was, "The biggest problem in the world could have been solved when it was small." And that's from Lao Tzu from ancient China. And that's so, so true with toxics. So true, because if we look at and recognize that there's a problem, and do something about it before it turns into a really big problem, it's so much easier to take care of, and it really makes a huge difference. So let's not say that, you know, it's just a little problem, because little problems turn into big problems. Okay, Joy. So tell us about the different kinds of alternatives we have to using toxic dry cleaning. Within the dry cleaning industry, what you do is you help different businesses replace their toxic chemicals with not toxic chemicals. So what kinds of things are dry cleaning places using now that are less toxic?
Right. So there's several different alternatives out there on the market. Probably the most popular is a hydrocarbon-based alternative that people have been switching to. It seems to do the job fairly well for them. the cost is fairly comparable for them as far as compared to the regularly used solvent for chloroethylene. The health issues and environmental issues may not be as bad as some of the other alternatives out there. There is an issue with the flammability of it. But nonetheless, it's been a very popular, easy-to-use, easy-to-learn replacement for PERC. There's a few other alternatives out there on the market. One's in acetyl-based, one's propylene glycol ether-based, one's siloxane-based. I'm a mechanical engineer, not a chemist, so I'm not going to go into exactly what the chemistry of these different alternatives are, but I guess suffice to say that Turi has done an analysis of these different alternatives and compared them all literally side by side, looking at their technical performance, their financial aspects, environmental, human health, safety, regulatory issues. And what's come out on top are two other ones that I haven't mentioned, carbon dioxide, which actually hasn't gotten a lot of traction because the equipment is very expensive, even though it is a very green way of cleaning clothes. But the other one is called professional wet cleaning, and that's the one that's risen to the top on our evaluation as well as other organizations that have done similar evaluations. And so that's the technology and the process that we work with cleaners in Massachusetts to help switch to. We like to make the information available to them about these other alternatives, but we have a bit of a budget that we're able to financially assist with grants. Facilities, and since that budget is limited, we choose to put our money towards the professional wet cleaning technology and assisting the facilities to switch over to that. And not only does it it rise to the top of the pile in those criteria elements that I mentioned, but if a shop switches from a solvent-based system to a professional wet cleaning system entirely, not using any other methods, they will save a lot of money on their energy bills. Potentially their water bills, their health insurance, their medical bills. You know, we've had a lot of anecdotal information about people just feeling so much better. Their employees are out sick much less. But again, their electricity bills can be cut in half. We've seen at some facilities. And water bills can be cut in half. We've seen at some facilities. It depends on what equipment they were using and what they're switching to, how much of an impact they see, but it's really makes a big difference in their operating costs that we've seen payback in between 2 and 4 years generally, which is pretty significant and pretty fast for a small business like a dry cleaner that depends on, you know, public coming and going and bringing their clothes to them. So it's not always that a small business like that in the service industry would get such a quick payback.
I'd like you to explain what professional wet cleaning is. I think that most people don't understand that what's called dry cleaning is actually wet because it uses solvents. And so if they're taking in for professional wet cleaning now, they've got clothing with tags in it that says dry clean only. So explain what wet cleaning is, and is it okay to take in your dry clean only clothes?
Right. So just a side note there, we're actually working with the Federal Trade Commission. Right now they have a proposed amendment to their care label rule out right now that we've given comments to hopefully change that care label in garments to make it easier for the dry cleaners and for the consumers to understand what can and can't be done with that cleaning, with that garment. So in the meantime, though, yes, if a cleaner feels comfortable with using their professional wet cleaning system on something that says dry clean only, we have cleaners across Massachusetts now doing that. So if they're trained and they're knowledgeable in what they're doing, there won't be a problem.
So what is the process of wet cleaning?
Yeah. Right. So it's not your home laundry machine. So we just need to make that clear from the beginning.
Okay, good. It's not just the cleaner throwing it in their laundry.
Exactly. And I don't, if someone has a, really nice expensive suit, just don't go throw it in your laundry machine, instead. So it is a several-step process that begins with a computer-controlled washing machine, which has a detergent pumping system hooked to the back of it. So the cleaner will purchase certain different types of detergents, conditioners, softeners, and other additives that get added through this pumping system. So the machine is computer controlled and is programmed to have different programs run on it. So they might press 1 and it's a wool jacket program. They might press 2 and it's a silk blouse program. They can program, I don't know, at least 50 programs, you know, into different machines for how different they want it to be. I've seen typically they only use like 7 to 10, maybe, different programs. Anyway, so then the detergent, the other additives, come in through the pumping system and mix with the water in the machine before either the water or the detergent touch the clothing, which is different than your home machine. Either your water comes in first or your detergent's dumped on it first. So this mixture of the detergent additives in your water creates its own solvent, essentially, to act on the clothes once the clothes are immersed in it. So that's the high-tech end of the washer. Then at the end of the program cycle, which only lasts like 12 to 15 minutes maybe in the washer, it then goes to a dryer. And the key on the dryer is that it needs to have what's called a residual moisture control on it. And that means that you can either time the dryer to end at the right time, or you can program it to end with a certain amount of moisture left in your clothes. And following the drying process, it goes on to what's called tensioning equipment, where the pieces go back on a form finisher, and the clothes are pulled and steam blown through them to help them regain their shape and to get out the initial wrinkles in it. And then they're touched up using pressing equipment.
Very interesting process. We need to take another break, but we'll be back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Joy Onash from the Toxics Use Reduction Institute at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio, and my guest today is Joy Onash from the Toxics Use Reduction Institute at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. I'm so used to saying the University of California, I had to stop for a second and say University of Massachusetts. anything else you want to tell us about dry cleaning?
Let's see. I just think that maybe, you know, I think your audience is probably going to be consumers of the service of dry cleaning. So something that we have tried to work towards is educating the consumers that there are alternatives out there, and suggesting that the more they inquire with their dry cleaner as to what they use, the more awareness the dry cleaners will have that there's an interest and a need from the consumers for them to seek out alternatives. There's only so many ways we can reach out to the public. You know, we can't go knock on every single person's door. So the more ways we can educate the public about that is, oftentimes when I talk to groups about different ways of reducing toxic chemicals, I suggest that they take home one, you know, little piece of homework or one little change to make. And I often suggest that next time they go to the dry cleaner, simply ask that they can be told what is being used at the facility, and even make the suggestion that, you know, hey, have you listened to this professional wet cleaning that I've heard about? I hear you really get some terrific benefits out of it.
If somebody wanted to find a professional wet cleaner in their community, because people listen to this show actually all over the world, how would they find one? Is there like a website that lists them, or?
Well, unfortunately, there's not a really reliable consolidated spot to go to. The EPA does list some on their website, but I found it to be very out of date. There's different makers of other alternatives that will list users of their alternative. For example, a siloxane material called Green Earth. If you go to their website, they'll list all of the dry cleaners that use their particular alternative. And our website lists the wet cleaners that we've worked with in Massachusetts to convert to dedicated wet cleaning. But, you know, if someone in Montana is interested in finding someone in their town, I'm afraid I don't have a resource for them except to go and explore and talk to the different dry cleaners in their area. And one note of caution I would give them is that if a dry cleaner has a sign outside that says organic, environmentally friendly, earth friendly, back to nature, something like that, it's actually often a red flag that they're using one of the alternatives but not professional wet cleaning.
That's very good, because I actually have a cleaner down the street from me that has one of those signs. And
right,
I thought, oh, good. But I didn't go in and ask them, because I actually, so here's my solution to dry cleaning. I haven't dry cleaned anything in 30 years.
Yeah, that's the other alternative.
Yeah. I just decided that, you know, when I found out that you bring your clothes home from the dry cleaner and they give off perchloroethylene, I decided I didn't want to breathe that in my house. And, you know, here's one thing you can do. If you can't get to a dry cleaner that is less toxic and you absolutely have to dry clean your clothes, then you can, when you bring them home, hang them up outside on the patio or in your garage or someplace not in the living space. Take the plastic bag off and let it air out, not in your living space. So that's the first thing.
Exactly. And also, to follow up on the issue with sort of the green-friendly signs that people will put out, you know, if that is the alternative available to you in your community, it certainly may very well be better than the perk that another cleaner may be using. So if you can't find a professional wet cleaner to clean your clothes, using one of these other alternatives that promotes themselves as green certainly can be a very viable alternative.
Yes. So then the other thing is that what I did was that I just decided that I would make choices about the clothes that I wear that don't require dry cleaning, period.
Right.
And I wear mostly just cotton and linen. And in the wintertime, see, I live in Florida, and I'm not working in an office, so I don't have to wear wool suits or something like that. But I have a few sweaters and things that I just wash by hand. I don't know what I'd do if I had, you know, like an expensive wool suit. But there's a lot of clothes that you can buy. You can buy like linen jackets. I look for like unlined cotton jackets. And I look professional enough for what I do with my life. And I can look pretty professional wearing cotton and linen clothes that don't have to go to the dry cleaners. And I just make those choices really, really carefully. And then I wash everything in the washing machine. And if I really have to look crisp, you know, you can just take your clothes down to a dry cleaning place and they can just iron it for you with a professional iron.
Right.
And it looks
like
you've had it dry cleaned.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they
if that's what you
it's
need.
Amazing what they can do with a presser.
Yeah. They can do things there with a presser that you can't do at home.
Exactly.
So,
definitely. Definitely other ways to seek out alternative methods and processes.
And you could also look for, like, Google is really good at finding local things now. And so you could just type in the name of your city and wet cleaning. And if there's a wet cleaner, it should probably come up.
Yeah, the trick is that a lot of the wet cleaners don't yet advertise themselves as wet cleaners. They're a little bit worried that the public will think that means that they're just putting it in a laundry machine or think that they can do it at home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, each cleaner that I've worked with in Massachusetts has taken a slightly different approach. Several of them have promoted the fact that they're doing professional wet cleaning. Some of them wait until at least a year has gone by, that the consumers are still very happy with how their clothes are being cleaned, and the cleaner feels very comfortable with the process. And then they finally say, hey, guess what? I've been cleaning your clothes in water for the last year. Don't they smell great and look great? So sometimes they don't put themselves out there as being wet cleaning just because they're afraid of how the consumer is going to interpret that language.
That's a good point. There's so much education that goes on with this because we have ideas about what words mean, and then new technologies come up, and we do need to learn the new technologies, and consumers do need to be educated. And there needs to be a shift. This is one of the things that I've talked to a lot of people about. Like I'll say to a manufacturer, why don't you make whatever it is less toxic? And they'll say, because I have to be able to make it in a way that my consumer wants it. And it's not that consumers want toxic products, except that we're so accustomed to how things are that are toxic.
And the performance
Like, I'll just use as an example, when I first started removing toxic chemicals from my life, I had found the perfect shade of red lipstick. It took me years to find this perfect shade, and I finally got it. And then I decided to remove toxic chemicals from my life, and I went, wait a minute, no, we're giving up the red lipstick. And it really took me a while to like really get how toxic that red dye was and everything else, the paraffin and everything that was in that red lipstick, and that I was eating it and licking my lips and everything, and that I was getting so much toxic exposure. And it finally, you know, I could get the picture that there was like a skull and crossbones on my lips about that lipstick, and I stopped using it. But I've found over the years that the easiest thing to do is to go find the non-toxic alternative and find something you like and get the replacement first and see that there's a replacement, and then you can let go of the old toxic thing.
Right.
Sometimes it is hard to, sometimes it is hard to, to let go of what is something that you've been comfortable with, even if it is toxic.
Right.
Well, this has been an excellent show, Joyce. Thank you so much for being on. We just have like 2 minutes left. Is there anything else you want to tell us about dry cleaning or Turi or living toxic free?
Well, let's see. I guess sort of to give a quick summary of the program, the fuller program that I run here is the Community and Small Business Program. And so I run a grant program, if there's any Massachusetts listeners, that we welcome applications from community organizations and municipalities and small businesses who are interested in getting some grant money to help them implement a project to reduce the use of toxic chemicals, whether it's in dry cleaning or pesticides in lawn care or house cleaners. We have a whole list of projects on our website that have been done in the past to give you ideas. We have up to $20,000 available for large projects and $10,000 for smaller, more local projects. And then my program also covers other small business sectors. I've been working a bunch with auto shops to reduce the use of solvent cleaners and nail salons to find alternatives to the toxic chemicals that they may use and limit their exposure. So there's obviously much more on our website at turi.org, and a lot of our program information can be found under the Home and Community tab. And the information about the dry cleaners is actually under our small business section.
Tell me where to look. I have the site right in front of me. Tell me where to look exactly, and I'll go there. And can you tell me exactly how to get there?
Yeah, about the dry cleaning?
Yeah.
So if you go to the home page and then go under Our Work and go to Business.
Our Work. Business, okay.
And then Small Businesses.
Okay.
And then Dry Cleaning. It's kind of buried. You can also just type in turi.org/dry cleaning, and it will get you there.
Okay, good.
It's a shorter way
there.
To do it. But there's information there about Massachusetts cleaners that have switched, and we have written up several case studies. I collect data from the dry cleaners on their performance and their costs from using the solvent to using the wet cleaning. So a bunch of our case studies that we've written up from that data are on our website if people are interested. And there's lots of information there that people can print out and take to their dry cleaners, you know, next time they go by and ask what they use. They can take the information.
Joy,
and help educate
you're
them.
Breaking up, so, and it's also the end of the show. So I'm going to say thank you. And this is Toxic Free Talk Radio. You can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com to find out more. Be well. Yeah.